So what we've done is we've gone through the first two of 26 reasons why Jews don't believe in Jesus. 26 reasons Jews don't believe in Jesus. And there's a few of you here tonight who weren't here on previous nights, so I'll explain to you the premise very quickly. The premise is that this is anti-missionary literature, meaning it's written to refute the gospel and to refute the New Testament, and to refute the claims of Christianity. It's written in defense of Judaism, and in response to the, the missionary efforts of evangelical Christianity, for the most part. And so, it's written by Asher Norman. He's an Orthodox Jew and a lawyer. So, that's a little bit of an overview of the book. The idea of a class like this, you know, you might think, now why would believers want to study literature from an opposite perspective? And the idea is that we should know why we believe what we believe, and we shouldn't be afraid of learning other perspectives. And also, as we are challenged with some of these core questions, some of these deep questions that are raised as we work through this book. We haven't hit too much that's really been too earth-shaking so far, but we will. And as we are, you know, that will be an opportunity for us to investigate the scriptures ourselves further and see why it is we believe what we believe. Okay, so that's the premise. We've been through the first two reasons, and tonight we're going to knock out reason number three and reason number four, which I think should be a task easily accomplished because the reasons are very similar, and this is should not be difficult material for us. It should not raise too much objection for us in a Messianic congregation. Okay, reason number three is that the commandments of the Torah are eternal. Now let me explain why this is a reason that Jews don't believe in Jesus. And here's a quote from the book. He says, Mr. Norman says, Christian missionaries often assert that Jews are not required to keep God's laws because they, the laws that is, have been replaced by faith in Jesus. So the premise is that prior to the coming of Jesus, the Jewish people and the children of Israel had to keep the laws. But after the coming of Jesus, that's no longer the case. Now you need to believe in Jesus, and that believing in Jesus works as a substitute for obedience to God's laws. And so that's the problem that he's addressing here by saying, wait a second, that doesn't hold up, because the commandments of the Torah are eternal. And so we're going to look at a series of passages rather quickly that he offers us. Exodus chapter 17, verse 9. God said further to Abraham, Now, as for you, you shall keep my covenant. You, your descendants after you, throughout their generations. So Abraham's descendants, that's the seed of Abraham, that is the people, the children of Abraham is another way to say it. This is my covenant which you shall keep between me and you and your descendants after you. Every male among you shall be circumcised. Okay, so first off the bat, he says, first thing we want to see here, Abraham and his children are supposed to be circumcised and keep God's covenant. Not just in Abraham's generation, but all of his descendants after him. Fine. Okay, let's grab another, Exodus 31. That one alone is a big deal, and I know why he put that one first. Because in Christianity, reading Paul, you could come to the conclusion that one of the first things to be tossed out is circumcision. That now circumcision is a circumcision of the heart, and is no longer a literal, necessary, physical thing. Needless to say, since we're studying Galatians, I suppose, needless to say, there are the issue with Paul and circumcision is not that he's abrogating circumcision for Jewish people. He's making a distinction between Gentiles and Jewish people. Okay, Exodus 31, verse 16 says, "So the sons of Israel shall observe the Sabbath, to celebrate the Sabbath throughout their generations as a perpetual covenant. It is a sign between me and the sons of Israel forever." So three great things here. Okay, first one is throughout their generations. So that means as long as there's generations of Jewish people, that the Sabbath is ongoing. Second is, it's a perpetual covenant. Perpetuity. And the third is the word forever. A sign between me and the children of Israel forever. So, Sabbath, why is he bringing this one up right after circumcision? Because the next thing you're going to hear from a Christian missionary is probably going to be that the Sabbath has been done away with or replaced by Sunday. Okay, so he's kind of on a track here. Deuteronomy 11:1. "You shall therefore love the Lord your God and always keep his charge, his statutes, his ordinances, and his commandments." So there's all the different kinds of laws that you would possibly find in the Torah. Charge, statutes, ordinances, commandments. And the point is that you are to always keep these. So, yeah, and that's, I mean, I don't know why that particular verse over another, this is something that comes up again and again and again in the Torah, that the commandments are ongoing. That the Torah is not done away with, is not to, to be canceled, I should say. Deuteronomy 28 is the next one. We're just going to move through these pretty quick. 46, verse 46. What? "They shall become a sign and a wonder on you and your descendants forever." What shall? That's out of context. "These curses shall come on you and pursue you." All right. So, well, strike on that one. Strike that one off the list. But that one's out of context. But we get the point. And there's a lot more text than these. We could have pulled out, we could spend the whole evening looking at texts that say this very same thing. All right. One more. 29:28. It's 29:29 is supposed to be the reference. So I think there might be a numbering discrepancy. See, that's the deal. So it's a difference. You'll find this happens a lot between a Christian published Bible and a Jewish published Bible. There are discrepancies in the verse numbering systems. So. Okay, so the reference is, "The secret things belong to the Lord our God, but the things revealed," that is the Torah, what God has spoken, "these things belong to us and our sons forever." Why? "So that we may observe all the words of this law." So it's another reference that the Torah goes on forever. Which is not, it's not that big of a deal. Why is he making such a big deal out of it? This, in fact, it's something that if you read the Bible, it's just da obvious, because it's repeated again and again and again, eternal statutes and so on and so forth. The reason that it's not da obvious, of course, is because we teach just the opposite in Christianity. Okay, so then he takes us out of the Torah into Psalm 111. This is fun, we're just doing a Bible study here. Psalm 111. Verse 7. "The works of his hands are truth and justice. All his precepts are sure. They are upheld forever and ever. They are performed in truth and uprightness. He has sent redemption to his people. He has ordained his covenant forever." And his covenant, is the Torah is. The covenant is not the Torah. We need to make sure that we make that clear. The Torah is not the covenant. The covenant is not the Torah. The covenant of Israel is the agreement to keep the Torah. Because at that covenant ceremony, they say, Moses reads the Torah, and then they say, everything that the Lord has said, we will do. That's the covenant. But the Torah contains the covenant, because it contains God's promises. So, he says, he has ordained his covenant forever. There you go. How about 2 Kings? Let's go see 2 Kings. This is like Bible drill, you know, sword drills. 2 Kings 17 and 37. The statutes and ordinances and the Torah, the law, and the commandment which he wrote for you, you shall observe to do forever. You shall not fear other gods. Okay, so it's just another forever commandment. And we could go look at Ezekiel. Well, we should, just because we've done them all so far. Go get one from the prophets. You see why he did this? Why he has one from the Psalms, one from the prophets, and one from the writings. But Kings is actually prophets, so never mind. He has one from the Psalms and two from the prophets. Ezekiel. Okay, 37:24. This is a great prophecy. This may be the bomb of messianic prophecies, is Ezekiel 37. It starts off with the resurrection, the valley of the dry bones, and then we have the two sticks, Judah and Israel being united as the two sticks. And then we get into this very explicit material about what's going to happen in the Messianic age. So here it goes. My servant David will be king over them. And you've got to remember, this is when he says David, this is Ben David, the son of David, the Messianic king from the line of David. So my servant David will be king over them, and they will all have one shepherd. And they will walk in my ordinances and keep my statutes and observe them. So that's the first thing. When Messiah comes, everybody's going to walk in God's ordinances and keep his statutes and observe them. They will live on the land that I give to Jacob my servant, in which your fathers lived. They will live on it, they and their sons and their sons' sons forever, and David my servant will be their prince forever. I will make a covenant with peace with them. It will be an everlasting covenant, and I will place them and multiply them, and I will set my sanctuary in their midst forever. My dwelling place also will be with them, and I will be their God, and they will be my people. And the nations will know that I am the Lord who sanctifies Israel when my sanctuary is in their midst forever. I say this is such an explosive messianic prophecy because it's saying that when God brings Israel back to the land and they're keeping the Torah and the temple is rebuilt, then everybody's going to see it. And they're going to realize that God has not forsaken his people Israel. So it will turn theological expectations upside down, the coming of Messiah, according to this passage. Okay. So that's the passage he gives us. And then he wraps that section up with this conclusion. He says, if words have meaning, and if God means what he says, Jesus did not fulfill the law because the law is eternal. What's this mean? Well, we're talking about Matthew 5, right? Matthew 5, 17? Yeah. Matthew 5, 17. Do not think that I came to abolish or to do away with, to cancel the Torah. I did not come to abolish, to cancel the Torah. I came to fulfill the Torah. And the way that this passage, Matthew 5:17, is ordinarily taught within the church is, well, of course Jesus didn't cancel the law. He fulfilled it. He fulfilled it so that we don't have to. Is is the meaning. Now, this is, if you think this through a little bit, this is not a logical way to explain that particular passage, right? Because it's like he didn't cancel the law, he just canceled it. You know, I mean, right. Okay, so I've thought, let's obviously Asher Norman has heard that line of reasoning. So let's just take a look from a Jewish context. What does it mean that Jesus fulfilled the Torah? When he says, I came to fulfill, what does it mean? What does it mean to cancel the Torah? So I thought we'd take a look at a few references. I've got the Mishnah here, and I'm going to take you back to Pirkei Avot. I'm sorry I didn't get these on the sheet. I normally would put the rabbinic material on the sheet, but I had already printed these when I thought of doing this. And then, being an environmentally concerned person, I didn't want to print 25 more sheets of paper. I guess I could have put it on the backside, but that would have been confusing to you.